Good evening. Looks like it's going to be a great show tonight. Lots going on. Very shortly, we should get a call from Valley Radiation, who has a big retail therapy exercise. In fact, it should be her. You want to put her on the air? Hello, is this Diane?
This is Diana.
Hi, this is Greg Gussie. You're on the air. Tell us what you're up to this weekend.
Well, this Saturday, which is March 28th, we're having our first annual spring retail therapy event. And by we, I mean Valley Radiation Therapy Center. This is kind of a very unusual event in that we are looking for a great way to give back to the community that we're treating cancer in. So all that we're asking people to do is show up at Turkey Red beginning at 10:30, and we will provide refreshments and goodie bags and free gifts and a very large, lengthy list of all of the retailers and businesses that are involved. And from there, individuals at their leisure can walk around and visit those businesses and retailers and take in all that they are offering in honor of this event and honoring anybody who's been affected by cancer.
Super. Well, you know, this is important to me, being one of those folks and and being one of Valley Radiation's clients. Should be exciting. Now, this is not something you've invented. This is this goes on around the country, I understand. These type of things where retail facilities try and help cancer patients and make accommodations for that. Is this part of that same sort of thing?
No, actually, this is something that we're doing independently. There is no catch in that this is not a fundraiser. This is something where we just want to have the opportunity to give back to anybody that's been affected. And now that means survivors, patients, caregivers, family, friends. Unfortunately, most of us have been affected by cancer. So this event is open to any of those individuals. And really, it's just a wonderful way for people to come out and enjoy themselves stress-free, take in the good weather that I've heard we're going to have, and just enjoy themselves. It's between 11 and 2. Check-in will start at 10:30. And again, just really no catch, and it's something that we just want to do for the community. We've been treating cancer in this community since 2006 and thought it would be a great way to give back.
Oh, well, I think everyone's going to really appreciate what you're doing. Now, you yourself will be out here?
I absolutely will. I will be I'll be at Turkey Red for a large portion of the day, and so people can find me there. And I also plan on getting in some retail therapy, so I have some stores outlined, but I will definitely be visiting.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, everyone out there in the world, don't miss this. It's Saturday here in Palmer. I think everyone knows where Turkey Red's is. I believe, Mike, you folks are involved in this, too, here with Radio Free Palmer. You want to say anything about that? Well, no, he doesn't. We're very loose here. Okay, well, thank you so much, and I guess I'll let you go.
Absolutely.
And we'll look forward to seeing you at Turkey Red. I also understand you, is the Acoustic Project kids going to be there, too?
They are. We'll have two of the three, and they'll be playing beginning at 10:30 at Turkey Red, and then they're going to be moving on to Vagabond Blues. I'll throw out there, too, that we are providing free refreshments at Turkey Red for check-in, and then also at Vagabond Blues we've got some coupons for free food that we'll be giving to attendees as well. And just to, I guess, draw the line somewhere, that'll be for the first 150 that check in. So, but we'll have great music and great food and lots of stuff going on, not just spending money on stuff in stores. We'll have a lot of great workshops and classes and things that are happening around town as well.
Well, thank you so much for being part of our community and making our community a better place. And we'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday morning.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane. So that was Diana from the Valley Radiation Therapies talking about their retail therapy goings-on that will begin at Turkey Red, just up the street from Radio Free Palmer. And now we're going to move right on. Oh, one other thing is I believe Paul Morley's band is playing at Vagabond Blues Saturday evening as well. And that should be interesting. That's a Palmer Arts Council sponsored event. No, that's not Paul Marley's. That's Jim Beck's, and they're playing. Are they playing at Mad Hatcher's? Yes, they'll be up at Mad Hatcher's. And also, speaking of Mad Hatcher's and weekends, you know, every Sunday between 3 and 5 at Mad Hatcher's, there's an open jam session of bluegrass music. How unusual. So if you know the G, C, and D chords on your guitar, show up. That's all you know. And all you have to know. And use a capo if you have to play an A. Sorry, bad jokes. So since I'm having bad jokes, I'm now going to bring us on to our musician this evening is Jim Lassiter. And I'm going to let him play a little bit, and then we're going to talk to him for a bit. And superb musician. And here we go. Jim?
Hi, how we doing?
Good.
This is a song off a new CD Robert Howard and I have out from the Duosonics. Across the sea, there's a girl who loved me, eyes of blue, hair of gold. She's waiting there for me. I've never seen her and do not know her name. She's the gal of my dream, far away across the sea. She's waiting there for me. I may fly like a bird that girl waits for me way up high in the sky. I know she's there for me. I've never seen her and do not know her name. She's the gal of my dream, far away across the sea. Waiting there for me. She's waiting there for me. She is waiting there for me.
Wow, I like the blues. And and they're different chords. They use C, G, and F. But throw that out there. So, Jim, I don't know if, I mean, I know you're a fixture here. I don't know you very well for a fixture. Can you tell us some stuff about you?
Sure. I've been in Palmer for 32 years. came to Alaska with my dad, who was in the Air Force.
That was back in the 60s. Lived in Anchorage a while, moved out with my wife to Palmer because I didn't really want to raise my kids in Anchorage. I wanted to live in the valley, and I'm really happy I did. I got two kids, and everything's great now, you know. And I was a school bus driver. I got hurt, but I'm back playing music again. I used to play music for like 14 years as a professional, and I've played behind lots of people. I warmed up for Elvin Bishop War, played with Charlie Musselwhite, Freddie Robinson. I even opened for Cheech and Chong in Anchorage once.
Well, this is important these days with the advent of the legalization of marijuana. So, yeah. But we don't need to go into that right at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, but now you're playing, and apparently you were playing a long time ago, because I've seen a picture with Robert Howard.
Mm-hmm. Who, that's right. Yep. Robert and I have been playing together as a duo Sonics for... When we do the duo thing, we've been doing that for like 37 years, and we've played in various bands together over the years, and we've been playing at the Last Frontier Brewing Company in Wasilla, and been going good, playing other places too in Anchorage. I like playing in the valley though, it's my favorite.
We'll get into it a little bit more later. In fact, let's get into all that a little bit more later, because I want to spread you out.
There we are.
So now I'm going to bring on Judy Vars. A lot of folks have seen Judy Vars' work, but don't know. With sound effects. Don't know her. Judy's most well known for her encaustic wax painting. You want to tell us a little bit about, first about yourself and then a little bit about encaustic wax?
Okay, I'm Judy Vars, and I've been in Alaska since 1995, and I came here to become an artist, and I think I've accomplished that.
I think you were an artist probably before you got here, but...
Well, I was selling cars at the time, and I thought to myself, I can't stand this. I want to be an artist. And I just imagined myself here, and this is what happened. Things worked out great sometimes.
I think they, at least for, I have to admit, I have a vast collection of Judy Vars paintings. I wish I had more.
Thank you.
It's they're pretty wonderful things. Lots of color, depth. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to tell you all where you can find my art.
Oh, sure.
Okay. I'm at the Arctic Rose Gallery and the Boheme Coffee Shop. And that's now at 1442 Northern Lights Boulevard. And some of my darker art is at Witchwood, mile 89.9 of the Parks Highway. And there's art at the Friends Gallery in Talkeetna, Candle Delirium in West Hollywood, and the Galleria Talentium in San Jose, Costa Rica.
Wonderful.
So I get around.
Well, I think we should charter a bus and head on down to Costa Rica and see your work in situ.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, encaustic wax. Tell us about your art and how you produce it.
Well, I got interested in encaustic wax a little over 10 years ago. And what was happening is I was trying to build volume in my art and stick things in it and make things out of it. And I had a funny experience. I was trying to make a raven with some body, so I got some stand wax. So that's really thick like honey, and I mixed it with black paint, and I put it on, and it was nice, but I noticed it never dried. So it had dust clinging to it and things like that. And somebody came along, and they said... you need to look into encaustic wax painting.
I see. Well,
and that's how it got started.
I don't think very many people know what we mean by encaustic wax. Maybe you should describe that.
I will. Encaustic wax, encaustic actually, is a Greek word that means to burn in. And so the process is it's melted beeswax mixed with Damar resin, and you paint with it. there's encaustic wax pigments, color paint. So you paint with it when it's wet and melted, and then it quickly dries. And then you take a heat source, like a heat gun or a propane torch, and you fuse each layer of wax. So just the nature of wax is you can build it. You can build layers and layers and get a lot of dimension, thickness. And then while it's still warm, you can scratch in it. You can embed things in it. You can collage into it. It's just amazing things that you can make with wax because it's wax. It's malleable.
Now, in caustic wax painting is one of the oldest techniques, right?
Yes, the technique was used with the Fayum mummy portraits. And so those were produced around the time of Christ, a little before and a little after. And they found these portraits in the Fayum region of Alexandria, Egypt, in the funerary or the catacombs. So it was a technique. You just actually take the image of the person that was going to be buried and paint their image on some thin birch panels and then wrap the mummy casings around the person. So they literally found thousands of these faces of people, and you know, we can look through a window of time and see what they look like thousands of years ago.
Isn't there also examples of ancient Greek encaustic work and then in the Roman period as well?
Yes.
Well, I guess the Fayum work would be Roman. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, and it's hard to show these things over the radio, but as Judy was describing, the depth, the translucence that's possible with it, it's not a fixed medium. It's easy to, well, not exactly easy to correct your mistakes, but it's easier than some things. It's very, very interesting. You currently have a piece down at Mad Matters that was over at the Umetsu College recently. It's sort of modern interpretation of Fayum painting, perhaps the diamond in the nose thing and the purple hair, or pink hair, I'm sorry.
Well, the ancient Greeks, they used four colors when they painted. They used white, black, Mars red, and yellow ochre. So all the colors they made came out of that. But I modernized my Fayum portrait by giving her a modern hairstyle and pink hair. And then I put a diamond stud in her nose. And I added some silver and pink, and she's adorable.
She's very adorable. It's then also, I recall that you do pay a lot of respect to painters and people that have gone before. Your Frida Kahlo interpretation of one of your friends in Costa Rica, I recall, is an exceptional use of the technique and the study of art.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit about why you choose.
Well, that particular painting, I admire my friend Marta. She lives in Costa Rica, and she's a beautiful woman. And it's just one of those moments. I said, I would like to paint you as Frida. And, you know, you just get kind of like a chill, and you get excited. So I knew I'd paint that painting, and it turned out real nice. I'm glad I did it.
I'm glad you did it, too. It made my day. Now, do you have, I know you have worked down at Mad Matters here in Palmer and currently, and do you have any shows or whatever coming up in the near future?
Oh, yeah. I've got, I'm going to give a demonstration at the Umetsu College Monday, April 6th, and that's going to be up in the art room from 3 to 6. And then I've got a show coming up, but it's way out there. It's going to be in October at the Arctic Rose Gallery.
Yeah, it's probably a little early.
Yeah,
we'll have you back on before that. But and the demonstration's open to everyone. Is there a charge for it?
No. Okay. It's open and there isn't a charge.
Okay, and this will be a demonstration of encaustic wax.
So you can, I'll give people an opportunity to try it too, but I need to charge about $10.
I see. Okay.
The ingredients are pretty expensive.
That's true. Yeah, you mentioned the resin that you add. You want to explain that a little bit, why you need to do that?
Oh, sure. Beeswax, you need to harden it a little bit and give it a shine. And so the Damar resin, that's the resin. It comes from a tree in South America. And it's the same thing that's in turpentine, too. It's just a tree resin. Sometimes you can use carnauba wax, too.
Give it that little extra hardness.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
make it more preserved, a stronger painting.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess some people that probably didn't catch the fact that these portraits, which are as vibrant today as they were 2,000 years ago, are 2,000 years old, that the fan portraits. And they've been around for a long time.
Exactly. They've survived all those years. Those are the oldest surviving portraits, too.
Yeah. So it's pretty amazing what this technique can accomplish in time. Excellent. Any more thoughts on the subject now that we have you here, or on painting in general?
Thank you. I got a book here. It's a coffee table book. It costs quite a bit of money, but it's got Fayum portraits in it. And it's called The Mysterious Fayum Portraits. But I found something that written by a poet of long ago that kind of describes the way I feel about it, too.
Oh.
So he said, "Blessed is he who drew you, and blessed is this wax that knew how to be vanquished by your beauty. If only I could become a maggot or a creeping woodworm so that I could crawl up and devour that wood."
Interesting. Okay, well, I'm going to have to think about that one a bit. That's kind of like Zen Koan. It's a little deep, especially maggots and worms. But you do have some of that. I've seen some of those expressions, I believe what you called in your darker pieces that are at...
Witchwood.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you have it. I think Judy's done. That was a great way to.
Well, thank you for having me.
But if you have more to say, it's okay. Well, then we're going to go back to Jim and have another tune and some more discussion with Jim.
Also mentioned that I'm at the Last Brewing Company most of April, at least one night every week. I'll be there the 3rd, the 11th, 17th, 18th, 24th.
And you're there with a harp man?
No, I'm there by myself.
Okay.
This summer I will be touring with Gary Sloan, the blues man, and as a matter of fact, Robert Howard and I will be touring with him, and we'll be up at the Fairview on the 5th of June, and... we're going to be down in Homer at Alice's Champagne Palace on the 13th, 19th, and 20th of June at the Vagabond Bar in Soldotna.
There you go. That's traveling the state.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be traveling all over. We have many more gigs coming, too. So you said you wanted a blues song, right?
I think that's why we have you here, isn't it?
Gonna be your dog. Hey, 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 got your good thing now. Hey, 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 got your good thing now. Well, I love you, baby, gonna get to you somehow. Lost your good thing now. Hey, hey, lost your good thing now. Love you, baby, gonna get to you somehow. Mm-hmm, oh, baby, you say. Oh, babe, gonna get to you somehow. Love you, baby, sure I'm gonna be your doll.
It's an old Big Bill Brunzy song.
Well, we can get into talking to you a little bit before the station break. Is that another minute? Okay. And then we'll talk with you for a bit, and we'll let Judy escape the studio, but you can leave anytime you want, if you want. Or you can stay. Yeah, there you go. Well, I'm so happy you came. It's a great pleasure to have you, and it's a great pleasure to have an artist like you in the community. So,
thank you,
Judy. So, Jim, yeah, blues. So you seem like 5 years too young to be a blues player. Why is that? How did you become a blues player? Why did you choose the blues?
Because of the man that I'm going to tour with this year, Gary Sloan. Gary's going to be 70 this year. Still playing the blues. He played blues in Alaska for, actually, he comes up here every summer. I've toured with him a lot. This will be his 50th year playing blues in Alaska. And when I was younger, and I mean when I was like 13 or 14, I lived on the military base, Elmendorf, and at a place on Government Hill called The Den, they used to have, Gary used to play there with his blues band called Proof. And I would go there, and I was in awe of the blues player guys, especially that's when I first met Robert Howard. Robert was playing a slide. I'd never seen anybody play a slide guitar, and that was where I got turned on to the blues, watching Gary play. And I've played blues a lot. You know, I was 14 years old and bought my first B.B. King album, you know, and then I learned all the old people that Gary knew, because I didn't know who Robert Johnson was.
Yeah, you have to have that period of
finding all that stuff. Yeah, well, yeah. Lead Belly and Howlin' Wolf and all those guys, all those greats, Buddy Guy, Junior Wells, all those people. And I played for many years after that with Gary in Anchorage. I backed him up on guitar. I've played bass for him. I even played drums for a while for him. I've done it all as far as the blues. But I really like blues a lot. I like blues, country blues. I really kind of like all music I like classical music too. If music is good, I like it.
Okay, we're going to take a break for a minute and go to the station announcement, and we'll get back into that, and maybe our poet guy will show up. Oh, is he
you
here?
You are listening
to KBRF
FM, Radio Free Palmer. We are an all-volunteer station. New volunteers are welcome. Email us at manager@radiofreepalmer.org or call 745-8951. Big Cabbage Radio welcomes your help.
Hello. Well, we're now on to our next segment of the show. Jim's going to be with us throughout. And now we have David Cheesham, has now become our poet in residence, who is going to read some poetry. I think he's going to need a microphone for a bit. Share there.
Test, this is the sound of my own voice?
Let's hope so.
Okay.
And so tell us what you have for us this evening, David.
Oh, you know, Judy Vars was talking about some of her darker pieces. These are some of my darker poems. I've got two poems dealing with inhumanity to other humans. One is in sort of a narrative tradition that tells a story, and one's more of a lyric. And so I have some rules about for myself when I write about these kinds of things about killing. And the first one is not to let yourself off easy. The purpose, the moral drive behind dealing with this is not to say we are so much better because we didn't do this. It's to say this is part of who we are, and as human beings, what do we have to do? What do we have to do to our thinking and our actions to avoid doing this, and not celebrate how much better we are than the others, because it turns into something else
now
when that happens.
Darker poems, do you do anything stylistically that the audience might want to be aware of?
Do I do anything stylistically? Not consciously, although I do try to get away from I talked about the moral danger. The aesthetic danger is something unearned, and I don't know if I've avoided that or not. But when you're dealing with something so big or so different than your own experience, how do you earn the right to speak of these things? And I'm not sure that I did, but that's the aesthetic question. That's the question of that I ask when I write a poem, and hope that I've hope that I haven't overextended, said more than I have the authority to say.
Interesting. I don't know if authority ever bothers me in writing a poem, but. You're a more moral man than I. Go for it. Read something.
Let's just take a moment to enjoy my superiority.
Yeah, exactly.
The moral superiority.
Yes, okay. Why don't you do that?
Okay. A conversation with Pol Pot. So what was it like, Pol Pot? Tell us what it's like. To be cheered on the streets of Phnom Penh by the people you would kill. Pol Pot scraped his toast. It was very good bread. We baked it at home, sliced thick and toasted, perhaps too dark. Pol Pot scraped his toast, scraped it with a knife. Scratch, 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 the knife on the bread. Flakes softly fell to the plate, soft and black. Scratch, 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 little flakes overdone. Softly buoyed in air until they settle on the plate. Dead little flakes of dark bread.
That's a kind of interesting metaphor.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It, oh, I must have said something. Our engineer is jumping up and down in hilarity, almost holding.
I always like it when people laugh at my dark poems.
So what brought that about, this Pol Pot poem? Which is, what an alliteration there, huh?
What brought it about? It came from a period of my life where I was really, for a period of 8 years, I was really, really studying this. And again, I don't know what brought it about. I don't remember. But I'm avoiding your question, but I think there was just a sense of it had to be dealt with, and this immense evil that happened, and it had to be dealt with without pretending that I really knew what it was like. It was as an act of imagination, and it was a conscious decision, the Cambodian probably wasn't eating toast, and there probably wasn't a conversation over breakfast with anyone like this. So I think it's a clear act of imagination, what I hope comes across is that the unfathomability of it.
No, I think that comes across. Okay. Let's try another one.
Well, this one's longer and maybe a little bit lighter, even though it is, it's film noir poem. It's more narrative, the lyric is all about just capturing an emotion. The narrative is about telling a story, and I don't think enough poets these days write narrative poems. I'd like to see more narrative poems. Okay, film noir poem. On the right hand, old defensive scars above his knuckles, missing pinky on the other, a defiant twitching in his left eye, scars on his bristled face, his nose, his ears, but the only wound that matters, pumping blood from his chest. He thinks it's a bad thing to die right now. Grandkids, can I say the son-in-law, the debts, but he dies anyway. Someone finds him lightly powdered with snow. He used to laugh about those ugly scars. You should see how the other guys look. You know his name. You cannot love him. He had a dog he named Knots and a plane he named Therese, a name only he would use for the plane, I mean, a Cessna with skis and floats, room for caribou and supplies. Knots slept on the softest bed at home, curled so his snout rested on his paws. Therese was also the name of his wife. I don't make you laugh so much these days, he'd said. She shook her head. I guess you don't. I never married you to make me laugh. She froze when asked, why marry me at all then, years ago? The killer could never have faith in an all-powerful God creating company. Power doesn't ask for repetition. He took only one shot, refused another, a superstitious refusal to stop. He jogged in the dark past the Dairy Queen to his car, driving off, only knowing the thundering shot, a grunt, and a fall. About God, the killer was right, was wrong, who knows, but wrong about repetition. There is a power in repeating, a soothing affirmation in the repeating dawn. On how the daughter's cries broke his dreams of the smell of wood stove bacon at dawn, his favorite early morning sleepy chatter, the victim didn't know to reflect. Failure and hard worry was all he knew, and worry colored with pain overtook him, and that the son-in-law was now a father eating his daughter's bacon, sleeping in her bed. More angry at the sun than the stranger with the rifle and the T-shirt, so cold, so oddly cold, so strangely dressed alone, speaking as if in tongues on the lot. Someone found him lightly powdered in snow at 4 a.m., streetlights on snow, P peaceful morning before the traffic, before cars screeched at stoplights, stoplights changing without purpose, stoplights stopping imaginary cars, stoplights stopping imaginary trucks. Someone found him lightly powdered in snow, called the police, who marked off the dark scene by 5 a.m. when the stoplights had cars to stop. By 5:30, they had removed the body. By 6, they had an ID from Therese, who had found a buyer for the plane.
Okay, you owe us a little explanation on this one. Let's have your annotation.
Well, it is a story about a, you know, kind of in the tone of a film noir film about a murder of a someone, a husband in an unhappy marriage, and a unhappy with his daughter's marriage to the son-in-law. And there is a little bit of suspicion at the end about who might have committed the crime.
I got all that.
Uh-huh.
The issue, I guess we're back again to the why. You know, here we have, you know, this dying guy, and he's happy about being dying because he's unhappy with the rest of the world. And,
not sure if he's happy about dying.
Well, I don't know. He looks at his life, and I believe there was actually even a comment in there, but I don't know. You're the poet.
Right.
That made one think that he was...
Interesting.
He was looking at this as a way out. And,
interesting.
And you keep bringing him back into it until finally the police, of course, come and deal with the subject. That's how I would see it. But again, we're back to, and I think our listeners need to know this. I mean, you would not ask this of me when I was writing a poem, but I would ask you again, why? What brought this about?
What brought this about? Well, it was really kind of a riff, but I started off with, working with syllabics, with trying to have each line a certain number of syllables, and I followed the images as they led me. It was one of the most spontaneous poems I've written, and I don't know why.
Well, and there's another question I have there, too. You call this a narrative poem, and I guess because it's telling a story, but I would see it as a lyrical poem, and that may be the issue with the using the syllable count and whatever to get that particular rhythm and the sing-song balance that you are using. So I just... You know, this is why we're having this program, so that we can, we can talk about these things, and I often think that that's the biggest question that people have about poetry is where does it come from and why do you do it? And I think if more people understood that, you know, they all are poets, it's just in a way of expression. And if we poets were more able to express ourselves, that we all have that poetry. How did I get off on this tangent?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's the nature of my beast. So where were we, David, before I went off on a tangent?
Okay, so there's a feeling and now is this different than other art forms where there's a necessity to say why someone writes poetry? I mean, I don't want to say that because there's things and I take them somewhat seriously about that I try to do with the craft, but I have a hard time. I don't know why. Why do you play music?
expresses my emotion.
There you go.
It's a way for me to relieve stress, express emotion. It's part of me that I can't reject.
Uh-huh.
I've tried not playing music before, and I always come back to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, music and poetry are probably the oldest art forms.
Mm-hmm.
I think they predate, you know, even scratching things on stones. They're inherently part of storytelling, and yet, and people will react to poetry and music without any intellectualism. They're able to absorb that expression at times. And perhaps that's what really disturbs people in a way. You know, why did I like that poem? And so we, instead of questioning ourselves, we tend to question the artist, the musician, the poet, the painter. Why did they do that? Why did they do that to us?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm getting that's poetic.
That's the purpose of it.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, the reaction
of
somebody, I think. I mean,
yeah. And there's a feeling of you know, either it creates the reaction or not. I mean, the problem with poetry being a medium of words is there's a feeling that I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. I put so much into the poem itself, and then it's kind of like explaining a joke. It's not a joke, but it's the same thing. If I have to explain it, then I must have done something wrong, I guess.
Well, I always think it's funnier if they don't get it.
Okay.
And I'm actually being very unfair. It's, you know, asking a poet to annotate is. It's verboten. It's you're as a poet, you're supposed to sit there and say, go figure it out. You know, what does it mean to you?
Same with music.
And the same with music. It's you know, music may be a little bit more rigid in its interpretations. I don't know. There's a lot of nuance in words.
I haven't figured out the Yellow Submarine yet.
You haven't? Oh, what a great tune. Are you going to play that next?
No.
I remember when I saw the movie, but maybe it was the drugs I was taking. Anyways, I did inhale, and I admit it, but I never, we can go elsewhere. So do you want to do one more little poem?
Oh, I think that...
Do you have time?
Let's see. Have
you had enough abuse?
I don't know if I... if I'm going to be able to find it in time. I came prepared to do two. Here it is. Yeah, it's 20 minutes long.
20 minutes. I want some more blues. That looks great.
I'm not going to say anything. Difficult snow. I am walking in difficult snow, my boots gnawing the white ground, and everything I know is here. The alders shivering are here. The memory of Devil's Club stinging last summer is here. I am alone, but Joseph Stalin is talking to me. He is saying, why sad? And I tell him, I am trying to write a good poem about terrible things, and I can't seem to find a place in the language. Joseph Stalin laughs, wraps the wool-clad arm around my shoulder, and says, ah, David, why make things so difficult? All I have to do is speak, and 20,000 people become my imagination, and I don't see them anymore. The alders shiver. The trail disappears. I am walking in difficult snow, and I am alone, but everything I know is here.
I love this poem. I've heard it before. David, I love the delivery. It's a great poem.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Do I have time for a quick story about it?
Sure, please.
I ran for election maybe twice. And the first time I ran, somebody found this on the web, and they came up to me and they said, "Well, what was this all this about?" And he wanted me to know this Joseph Stalin thing. He wanted me to know if I was for him or against him, and I just wanted to make it clear that I was against him. Yeah. So.
Well, that's a, in this, especially around here, that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, he wanted me to know that he was a bad guy, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. So. I think most totalitarian dictators are not very good guys.
That's right.
Pol Pot wasn't all that nice.
No.
We can get into others.
That's right. And not all my poems are about that, but a lot of them are. Some of my best ones are about very bad people.
Well, that's a very good poem.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate it. And I guess, I know you had to run someplace, and we're down to our last 10 minutes, so if you want to leave us, you may, or you may stay if you wish.
And, I'd like to hear one more song.
Okay. Right. Then we'll move on into Jim. I want to just let you know, David, how much I appreciate your coming here, and I apologize for my inherent nature of being the way I am.
Nothing to apologize for. Thank you so much for the honor. Thank you very much. This is a real treat.
Okay. So, Jim, you don't have to leave. Okay. We're going to hear a little more blues from you. And you're the man for the rest of the show. And
all right.
And I'm excited, and I'm just going to sit back and relax.
All right. I just wrote just a little bit ago.
Is it on your CD?
This will be on the next one.
been there, and I've been here, and I've been there, searching for you everywhere, and I've been so on my own, and I got one more river to cross. I've been there, thinking about you now, and I've been everywhere, and I got one more river to cross, and I've been everywhere, and I got one more river to cross, and I've been everywhere, and I got one more river to cross.
Let me know when that CD is ready so I can go buy a copy.
All right.
I'll be first in line. We're going to wind down the show now. I just want to remind folks that it's going to be another great weekend here in Palmer. Lots of stuff going on, especially Saturday. Good stuff, community stuff, and there should be some good music. Find Jim, find where he's playing. Where did you say you were playing this weekend? Over here at the in Palmer at, or in Wasilla at the
Not this weekend.
Not this
next weekend. Next weekend over at the last Frontier Brewing Company
okay.
in Wasilla.
So next weekend,
Friday night.
Head there and see Jim play in person.
And I'll have my CDs for sale.
Okay. Because I don't own one. I've seen you, but I bought a beer instead. Sorry.
I'll give you one.
We need to thank our wonderful engineer, Mike Molesky. It's, the Yardbirds actually wrote an album that they titled Roger the Engineer. In honor of people of your profession.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. And thank Jim. And, of course, thank Judy Vars for coming over and talking to us about Fayum painting and encaustic wax. A little bit different than what you normally see on the in galleries and whatever. You have to go look for it. There is another encaustic wax painter of some renown here in the state. I can't remember her name, but Judy's ours. She's part of the valley here, so she counts. And, of course, thanks to David Cheesham for some wonderful poetry and our audience. And I think I'll say good night and take her over, Mike.